FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's February 26th, 2018. Hard to believe, we've got 2 months almost gone, and time waits for no man or woman, and neither does the Federal Reserve, or do they? Well, hey, we'll talk about that. First, join the show. Email us at kl@kerrylutz.com. So what's happening with the Fed? They look like they're going into full-scale dove mode. Fear does amazing things, even to Federal Reserve officials. And here with us is Danielle Park to talk about it. Danielle, hey, you're back home in the tundra, huh?
Yeah. The snow's all melted. We've had tons of rain, but apparently the snow's coming back this weekend. So it's nice and sunny. So that's good. I'm happy with that.
Yeah, well, hey, you can only play in playland for so long, and then you got to go back to reality, right?
Right.
Unless you're the Federal Reserve, then you can just do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah, well, you can do that in theory, right? You can think that you're all powerful. We were joking that, you know, that old saying, talk softly and carry a big stick. They talk loud at all times and have a tiny little stick to use, which is the interest rate prod. And because they abused that in slashing rates for so long and dumping liquidity into markets every time any kind of correction began, they've now run out of their power altogether. And all they have is their big words and their, you know, changing of the figureheads. And every figurehead that comes in has to do the same thing, because, you know, they wouldn't be put in the position by the politicians who nominate these people. Whatever party it is, they need someone who's going to keep the asset bubbles going and keep adding debt at all costs. And so that's, you know, whether it's Janet Yellen, whether it's Powell, basically the script is the same.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things, the more things change, the more they stay the same. The hand merely rearranges the players in the game. So we have a new player at the Federal Reserve, but we got the same old, right?
Well, it's also because, you know, it's so, like, the parting quote from Janet Yellen was amazing. She said, you know, in her last conference, she was agreeing that valuations were so extreme historically at the top end of all the readings. And then she says, but, you know, is that a bubble or is that just too high? Like, this is the nuance that they live in. And in the real world, it's regardless, you know, who cares whether you concede it's a bubble or too high. The reality is that price correction is the next phase. And she actually even conceded that. She said, you know, what we worry about is to see if we look at asset values and we say, if they were to come down significantly, do we think the overall economy would be negatively impacted? And she said, there we think no. And, you know, you want to just peel over in laughter because you're just reminded of, you know, Ben Bernanke in 2006 with his, we think everything's going to be contained, you know, to Greenspan before him. And yet we've had, you know, these bubble after bubble after bubble. And every time it implodes, then they say that no one saw it coming. And, you know, was it impossible to avoid? And, you know, it's just, it's the playbook. It's the only one they've got, it seems.
Yeah, so it does. So it does. And look, we talked about bubbles. I think, like, the most fun bubble to watch, honestly, is Bitcoin, because there you can test your hypotheses really quickly and they either are right or wrong. And when it hit 20,000, I know we both said this is a bubble. And, you know, like the only problem with a bubble is most people who are in it don't know it. But you and I both called it. And because it reacted so quickly, you know, I think it's a really great little laboratory for proving the very things that we're talking about. I have no doubt it's going to go back up over 20,000. Maybe it'll hit 40. Who knows? And it will crash again, unless something happens to the fiat currencies that every country in the world is using that makes them unusable. Then these cryptos really can't be an alternative to loonies or U.S. dollars or yuans or euros, right? I mean, they're not really currencies.
Well, to the extent you can be, as we talked about this before, the extent you can be paid in something and then use that same currency to buy your life expenses or necessities, that is a functioning currency. But when you are receiving your income in one or another currency and then turning around and trying to park your savings in a different one and pay for your bills in a different one, that's where you're exposed to huge exchange risk. And that's why the cryptocurrencies of the world are so dangerous for people. Plus, we know that most of the people that were participating or buying them were not doing it as a currency. That's a bunch of nonsense. They were all saying they were doing it as a, quote, investment, where they intended to liquidate it within the next 3 years or so. So, and then you had that whole mania of borrowing on credit cards to buy it. And I saw recently many of the banks, including the Canadian banks, have just brought in steps to say, hey, we're not going to let people borrow on credit cards at 20% to buy this speculative entity. So, you know, but here's the thing, Carrie, we have such a fever of speculation. It is such a widespread phenomenon all around the world, aided and abetted, as I've said, by central banks, by financial firms pushing debt and products. But what you end up with is it's like a carbuncle. You know, my cat had a carbuncle once on his neck when I was little.
Doesn't sound pleasant.
It's a big mound that happens, a bump. It billows and gets bigger. And then when it blows, it literally leaves a hole where like chunks of the flesh are blown away and you've got an indent. Okay. This is what a debt bubble is like. And this is obvious when you look at the net effect on capital. So the other article I was writing yesterday or today was the pension elephant. Now, we've talked about that before, how the deficits just keep getting bigger. And, you know, the math is so obvious. And you take CalPERS, the largest U.S. public pension plan. So because it lost $100 billion in the 2008 meltdown, because the demographics are unfavorable, because the funding levels have not been sufficient, because the benefits have been too rich and the contributions not enough, it has never recovered from that loss, even with this huge rebound in equity markets and all the, you know, liquidity funneling and all the speculation and all the cycle highs once more in valuations, which are not sustainable, but they're back there. That all that has not been enough to refill that hole. So all you get is a higher and higher level of funding required and, you know, gobbling up of state revenue for tax from everything else to be funneled into this unsustainable plan. So it's one thing if financial bubbles actually worked, you could say, oh, well, you know, you take a big risk and you get a big payoff, but you're net further ahead. Very, very few people ever get net further ahead in this process. Mostly you get a big blow up in values that distracts everything from people from everything that matters, that focuses corporations on spending trillions on buying back shares, that further billows asset bubbles and takes money away from innovation and investment and stability of things that matter. And then when the thing all blows up, everybody says, oh, you know, that's too bad. We didn't know. We didn't understand. But hey, there's a huge chunk missing now. And we're going to have to, you know, not be able to deliver on all the promises or hopes or goals that we had because the capital's been destroyed.
Hey, and that's such a great point. I mean, we see it in Illinois. We see it in so many states around the U.S. And you know what? It's not just the United States. It's every Western democracy with an aging population. Europe, all over Europe, same thing. Spain, Portugal, France, Germany. It's happening all over the place where these promises have been made and they cannot be honored. And somebody's going to have to bite the bullet. And these public employees don't want it to be them. Right now, Danielle, there's a case coming up in the U.S. in the Supreme Court dealing with the requirement that non-union employees in public employment. So that you work for the government, all of your brethren are a member of the union. You don't have to join it, but you got to pay dues as if you were a member anyway. That appears to be in the process of being struck down. And, you know, in the case of public employees, the government is basically responsible for your pension, that it be adequately funded. But the unions have really somewhat responsible for this mess as well. For the public employees, it's an unholy triumvirate. First, the unions are supporting candidates for state government, whether it's the governor, the state controller, and then they're negotiating with the people they helped get elected in their benefit packages and the rules for retirement. And the rules for retirement, you know, you've got all of these people, like in New York State, there's one guy, he worked, I can't remember where he worked exactly. I think he worked for as a bus mechanic for 50 years. So he's on tier one, and that's a tier that no longer exists. He's getting $285,000 a year in pension payments, and he never made that much. Granted, he worked a long time. I think he's 86 years old now, and they're portraying the guy as being like a freeloader, a double dipper. It's really not his fault. I mean, that is what he was entitled to. He never took a vacation. I don't know that he did his overtime spiking in the last year, but the rules of these pensions have not been actuarially sound. As this guy proves, he's only one of like half a dozen people who are still in this tier one. They were not actuarially sound 50 years ago, let alone today. It's just, it's become very obvious today, you know.
Yeah. And if you look at what happened even in the sell-off at the start of this month in February, you know, some of those large pension funds lost 5% of their assets in a matter of a week. So it's a precursor for the reality that because people have not wanted to contribute enough. And the blame is across all levels. It is the administrators, it is the managers, it is the people doing the big picture planning for setting up the benefits and then, you know, figuring out how much has to be put in. The workers didn't want to contribute enough, the companies didn't want to contribute enough. So they all put their bets on, you know, these risky ideas and assets in the hopes that somehow that would win the money needed. But what happens is, you know, as I say, every cycle you get this run up in valuations, a big implosion, a big chunk of principal is destroyed, sets them back years. And the need, mind you, the need for payout of these elderly people doesn't recede with asset valuations. It continues to increase year over year. And so you're just deferring the day when the thing is going to be insolvent and you're going to have to turn to everyone and say, oops, you know, sorry, it's a total disaster. We're going to have to cut your benefits. We're going to have to, you know, bump out the retirement age. You can't retire, you know, for another 5 years. No one over X is going to get indexing. Like, these are the reality. It's going to cost everyone across the board. And because that's very politically unpalatable for every group, that's why it's been kicked down the road so long. But it is coming because, you know, 1 + 1 = 7. And that's just the way it is.
And it's like that for Social Security. You know, the government pension scheme, as they would say in the UK, they call them schemes for good reason. Whether it's Medicare, Medicaid, pensions, they're all improperly funded and improperly calculated, and they're just heading for insolvency.
And make no mistake, it is quite possible to fund a plan towards a certain target. So if you want to have, I say this to individuals all the time, if you want to have $3 million in your savings by the time you're 65, right, to fund a certain level of spending from there, it is quite possible to figure out how much you need to save each year and reassess it every year and top up where you haven't hit what you hoped in terms of growth, or if the price of some of the assets has gone down, increase what you're going to contribute to make it hit that end target year over year over year. It's very possible to do that, but it requires a constant contribution discipline. And that's what most people just don't want. They want to spend first and then, you know, save whatever shekels are left afterwards kind of thing, rather than, you know, make the savings the priority and then spend whatever discretionary funds you have left over.
That is a great point. And if you remember, 20, 30 years ago, we would have these companies, they had overfunded pension plans, and they would terminate them, which they had the right to do, or replace them with annuities, something that like that, or cash them out. And it was very common for these large companies to have it. Now they don't really have pension plans. It's 401k. You're kind of on your own. They'll match your contributions. And those can be very, very effective and positive. In a way, in some ways, it's better for the employees because they have more control. In other ways, it could be worse. But you can amass large amounts of wealth, somewhat acting somewhat conservatively in these 401k plans because you keep contributing whether the market's up or whether it's down. So you buy more when the market's down, you buy less when it's up, but somehow you keep doing it. It's a forced savings plan. And that's the thing with the pension. It was like a benefit that was given to you from the company, and you didn't really feel an ownership interest in it until you left the company and you started getting paid out, or you rolled it over into an IRA or something like that. So the framework is there, I guess. There's a company I've interviewed before that's kind of cool, I think, especially for millennials. And it's an app that will just take every transaction you do on your credit card, your bank account, and round it up a predetermined amount and then invest it in an account for you where you don't have that much control over the funds that they invest in, but you do different sectors. And, you know, if you're a millennial that can't figure out how to save, this could be a vehicle that could help you. The technology.
I think forced savings is essential for most people because we just have a hard time setting aside dollars from consumption or from kids or from, you know, whoever's asking for whatever it is we're the benefactor of. It's very difficult to have that kind of fiscal discipline on a daily basis. What I totally disagree with, though, is that it should be plugged into these passive pools of funds at every price, at every stage. Just that's how we've got the asset bubbles that we have. People, again, if you're going to have a savings target, then you're doing the heavy lifting. You're not tossing it into a casino and hoping it wins you the number you need. So in most cases, you know, there was a time when it before the in the 1970s, when it became illegal for pensions to have much in the way of equity investments at all. At the same time, it was, you know, illegal for these buybacks of shares. These things are all connected. When we turned the corner and decided that we needed to speculate more, invest less, and, you know, be responsible for our own math less, that's when we got into this casino mentality where we sort of queered all the rules again towards encouraging speculation rather than saving restraint, encouraging, as I say, borrowing money to buy back shares rather than invest in innovation and productivity. So we're paying the price. But the good news is it's a pendulum. And we are so far into the unsustainable realm here that the next bear market, and that's what these pensions are acknowledging. They're saying, listen, guys, We're not even back to 70% funded after all the hell that, you know, all the stuff that's gone on, all the artificial inflation in financial assets. We're still not at 70% funded in many of these cases. When we get a bear market the next time, it's going to be very hard to make the duct tape hold this thing together. It's going to become readily apparent that the contribution catch up is going to be so huge. People will
impossible.
Just, you know, be devastated. So you can kick the can, and you can pretend and extend, and we have, but at the end of the day, all it's going to take is the next bear market to reveal that it's all completely fake.
Hey, so you're so correct. As always, as I always come to expect from you, when it comes to financial matters, we're like 100% attuned here. And because so much of what you describe, I personally experienced and watched friends and family do it. And so
me too. I came to my understanding of all this stuff firsthand over the last 30 years. We learn from making mistakes. We learn from seeing truth, but unfortunately some people then decide to not see and go back to sleep or continue with destructive behaviors. And I always think that's a shame because you keep learning the same thing, the same hard way. You know, you might as well adjust and evolve.
And, you know, as parents, we want our children to learn from our mistakes. And I think I've gotten it through. They're all fully invested in all their retirement options. In a couple of years, they'll have saved more money than I've saved. And, you know, they're well on their way to it. But, you know, life happens and you wind up spending money on things that you really shouldn't. The concept of living beneath your means really should be drummed in to every member of society. No matter what your income, you should never be living at or above your means.
Well, you know, the number one most important thing about finances is get rid of your debt. That is the number one most important thing. It gives you resilience and strength to face whatever uncertainty is coming, because there's tons of it, whether it's economic, whether it's personal, health, marital, whatever it is. If you have no debt and you have liquid savings, you have a much better opportunity to ride these things out. You know, I hear about this all the time. Someone will say to me, so-and-so was doing great, and then they lost their job or their business had a bad year, and the next thing you know, they lost everything. And I say, okay, so they weren't doing great. And people will go, why would you say that? Well, because if they were doing great, they wouldn't have been wiped out by one interruption of income for a matter of months or a slowdown in a business cycle. They would have prepared for that as an inevitable and natural part of that cycle. They would have had no debt. They would have built up their savings and their money in the bank of the business or their personal accounts, and they wouldn't be wiped out just by, you know, one unforeseen event. And I think that that's the thing people have to get their minds around.
I think that's a great point. I think we'll leave it at that. So in times of plenty, you should be preparing for times of scarcity, of shortage. In times of shortage, you should be preparing for times of plenty. It's in the Bible there, for whatever it's worth. Anyways, make sure you go over to Danielle's site, jugglingdynamite.com. Check it out, especially her market commentaries. You'll get a breath of sanity and fresh air. Check out our site. Hey, and don't forget, be a part of the show, Financial Survival Network. Send us your emails to kl@carrielutz.com. Only about 25 behind right now. The Twitter feed's at Carrie Lutz. The Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. Danielle, we'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Thanks, Carrie.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.